Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, and along with Eric Edholm, it's our pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week we bring you everything there is to know about the NFL, including all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen and the way we hear it.
In addition to Peyton Manning, we'll talk about the futures of Vincent Jackson and Mario Williams. We'll also find out what the Jets are facing this offseason.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor here at PFW. Our host during the football season, of course, is Wayne Larrabee, but with the season now behind us, Wayne's going to be taking some time off. He will join us as we get closer to the combine and the NFL college draft. But during the offseason, my co-host, our senior editor at Pro Football Weekly, Eric Edholm, and we will also be joined by basically the entire Pro Football Weekly editorial department as we take you through the hot stove league in the offseason. As I just mentioned, the combine, we've got free agency, we've got the NFL college draft, but we will start this week with a season in review. We're going to do the AFC side this week. We'll be back with the season in review for the NFC next week. And as always, the way we hear it, all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen. And we start with Associate Editor Arthur Arkish, who covers the AFC South. And Arthur, coming out of Indianapolis, all the way we hear it about the Indianapolis Colts and Peyton Manning. Nothing all that much new since we got out of Indy last week, but still a very volatile story. As we tape, supposedly a meeting about to take place in the next couple days between Manning and Irsay. But from everything we heard in Indianapolis, not much good expected to come out of it.
No, I don't think so. I think that it's now pretty safe to say that with the way things, with the back and forth that, took place last week, and, you know, we kind of expected things to be quiet. That was exactly the opposite held true. You had Irsay, and Manning both kind of taking shots through the media, not necessarily taking shots, but making sure that they got the last word in edgewise. So, early on it looked like, and Irsay even said that it looked like they were going to try and find a way to bring Peyton back. And everything we've been hearing since then is that this is probably not going to end well. I think the one big news of note since we talked last week on the show was that Peyton has officially been cleared to play medically, so his neck is okay, but that does not mean that his arm strength has returned. That still will involve the nerve regeneration occurring in his tricep muscle and his arm regaining strength for him to be able to go out and be the guy that he was in the past.
Arthur, do we have any idea what the timetable on that might be to get him from, you know, a noodle-armed Chad Pennington-like guy to the, you know, crisp, hard-throwing Manning that was so good at that rhythm offense that they had in Indianapolis? Do we know when he might be all at that point?
You know, it's a great question. I think it's a difficult one to answer, though. I mean, I think that's what makes this whole situation so tricky and why Jim Irsay said it was such an unprecedented situation last week. We did find out this week the Duke Hoop blog did report that Peyton is actually down at Duke University working out with his old offensive coordinator, David Cutcliffe, who's also a good family friend of the Manning family. So he's down in Duke, presumably working on, you know, getting that arm strength built up. And as I mentioned, I think they're past the point of worrying about the neck so much as they are about building up the arm strength. But we also heard down in Indianapolis last week that if he was just worrying about 15, 20-yard throws, he'd be good to go. But it's really the downfield stuff that, of course, is so important for his game that has not yet returned and that we're waiting to see.
Well, and of course, Arthur, the thing that people tend to forget is that when you talk about 15 to 20-yard throws, in the NFL, an 8-yard out pattern can be a 30 or 40-yard throw, depending on where you are on the football field. So it is everything that Manning has to get stronger at to be able to do. And I think what's so interesting about this is you referred to it a couple minutes ago. Up until really December, when he actually went out and started throwing again, Jim Irsay said repeatedly, if I paid him $25 million not to play last year, I'm going to pay him $28 million to play this year. And then the weight of the 2-14 season piled up. Then he fired the Polians. Then he fired Jim Caldwell. And now he realizes he's looking at a complete rebuilding of his football team. What is the point of paying him $28 million to come back and play when he's going to be paying Andrew Luck, fortunately for him, half of what he would have paid him a year ago, but still he's going to sign a $30, $35 million deal? And from Peyton Manning's perspective, what's the point in sticking around to be on a rebuilding, losing football team for the last couple years of his career?
Yeah, I think you really hit the nail on the head. I mean, you talk about teams, or not necessarily talk about, but you see teams too often try and sort of balance the rebuilding and trying to win now at the same time. And, you know, maybe that's what Irsay had in his head. Maybe we can still be competitive. Maybe Peyton is worth, you know, 8-9 wins on his own. But I think the way we saw the wheels come off in such dramatic fashion, and then you mentioned kind of the rebuilding that started all the way at the top and is expected to trickle down through the roster, it just didn't make sense. You're going to be in salary cap major, you know, issues if you do try and bring Peyton back, and you just want to start fresh. You've got Andrew Luck, who certainly we don't know if he's going to be the next Peyton Manning, but he does appear to be the best prospect since Peyton. It seems to be the wise decision at this point just to start fresh, give Peyton an opportunity to go find the best scenario where he can, you know, have a chance to win now.
Well, and Eric, here's the other piece of this. It makes no sense under any circumstances to pay Peyton Manning another $28 million for 1 year if you're the Colts, but when it was all friendly, when it was all lovey-dovey, there was a couple options here. They could have restructured that deal, made it a much lower payment, and then turned around and traded him and maybe gotten some value in return for Peyton Manning. I'm sure Peyton would have agreed to that. Maybe they even lower it and Peyton sticks around because of his loyalty to Indianapolis and tries to earn some incentives and plays there another year. But with all that's gone under the bridge in the last couple weeks, Peyton's holding all the cards, because as long as he says no to a restructuring, he's going to be free sometime between now and March 8th.
I think you said it exactly right. A lot has happened in the last couple of months, you know, and this relationship has deteriorated a little bit. I think what might come out of that meeting is that both sides sort of agree to be civil, try to have a divorce as clean and nice as possible, because everybody says, look, it just doesn't look real pretty right now.
All right, Arthur, enough Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts. We want to review the season for the rest of the AFC South. We're back with you to do that in just a moment. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly. I'm Hub Arkish. Eric at home is alongside, and we're visiting with associate editor Arthur Arkish. And Arthur, we've cleaned up the Colts as best we can, year in review in the AFC. Let's move on to the Houston Texans, the division champs in the AFC South. Huge, huge decision to be made there during the offseason, really as big as the Peyton Manning story, just not nearly as controversial. What to do with unrestricted free agent Mario Williams? They're in salary cap trouble. They cannot afford to franchise Mario Williams. They also would like to re-sign Arian Foster. He's not free, but he's going to be, and they'd like to get a long-term deal done there. What's the chatter in Houston, and what do they do to try and stay atop the AFC South and go further in the playoffs?
Well, right after the season ended, the Texans came out and said that their top priority would be bringing back Mario Williams. But as you mentioned, the franchise tag will not be an option. It's going to be in excess of $20 million, absolutely cost prohibitive. So the only real option that exists is to lock him up long term. Now, if you look at what happened with the Texans defense last season after Mario Williams went down in, I believe, week six, they didn't really skip a beat. I mean, you had Connor Barwin just really coming through and making progress as the season progressed. He ended up with 11.5 sacks. You had Brooks Reed, who came up with 6 sacks and also just really, you know, grew faster than anyone expected. So I think what they found out is that as good and as talented as Mario Williams is in Wade Phillips' scheme, which is so good at getting the guys after the quarterback and creating pressure, they found ways to make up for the loss of Mario Williams. So they want to bring him back, but you mentioned the other piece of it, Arian Foster. Are still a restricted free agent, but they told him that if he could go out and replicate the season that he had in 2010 last season, he was going to get paid. He certainly went out and did his part, and they want to do what they can to bring him back long term. So bringing back both of them is going to be really tricky. This is a team that was already $20 million over the salary cap.
And on the offensive side of the ball, they certainly could use a wide receiver. I think everybody could see the lack of that downfield explosion. But what's the future at quarterback? I mean, we know we have Matt Schaub there. He'll be back as the starter, assuming he's rehabbed fully. But could they draft someone? Could they develop a quarterback and maybe go with a change down the road?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. I think what's, you know, the Texans are in a pretty enviable position. They don't have to reach on anything. They're just going to let the draft board come to them. They're going to go for all-out value. So I don't think it's a top priority, and I certainly don't expect Matt Leinart to be back. I do expect that to be one way for them to save a little bit of money by cutting the cord with him. But we know that Gary Kubiak is certainly a quarterback guru and always likes to have someone kind of in the mix who he can work on developing. We saw what he was able to do with T.J. Yates last year, who we certainly expect to be the number two quarterback moving forward. But, you know, I would not rule out the possibility of them bringing back a quarterback. Matt Schaub is actually entering a contract year as well, and we hear that they're not quite sure what they have there. He's got a lot to prove, not only coming back from that injury, but, you know, kind of working on some of his fourth quarter struggles, being able to get his team over the hump to show that he's, you know, able and worthy to get the long-term deal and remain in Houston.
You know, guys, I was visiting with our friends at our affiliate down in Houston on the air the other day, and they were like, well, what about T.J. Yates? And I was like, whoa. You know, it was nice what they did there for six or seven games, but we didn't see anything to indicate he's the guy.
Hold your horses,
he's still a fifth-round pick, you know, and maybe there's development there. But if Matt Leinart's going to be gone, you need another guy who you think maybe could step in and win playoff games for you. And one other thought before we move on, Arthur, again, came out of my visit on our affiliate in Houston. You know, you can talk all you want about Arian Foster, but before you give him a big money deal, look at every running back who got big money last year, D'Angelo Williams, Chris Johnson, Adrian Peterson. Mario Williams is one of the four or five best defensive players in football. I don't care how many Brooks Reeds and Connor Barwins you've got. You got to choose between Arian Foster and Mario Williams. You find a way to get Mario Williams done. Let's move on to the Tennessee Titans. Some changes in the coaching staff. A surprise season, a ball club that nobody saw going 9-7, losing out on a tiebreaker. Where do they go from there, Arthur?
Well, they're going to have to continue rebuilding that defense. They made great strides, particularly in the front seven last season, but they've got some real question marks, particularly in the secondary. You've got Cortland Finnegan, a free agent who may not be back, Michael Griffin, the free safety who may not be back as well. So they definitely need an upgrade, particularly at the safety position. And then they're still looking for that edge rusher, so there is work to be done on the offensive side of the ball. They're in pretty good shape, but you did see some of the troubles that Chris Johnson had. Certainly part of it was his fault. Part of it was the interior of the offensive line, so we wouldn't be too shocked to see them make a move earlier in the draft, maybe second, third round, try and address the interior and perhaps shake things up there in the middle.
Arthur, down in Jacksonville, the Jaguars have a quarterback in Blaine Gabbert. They may not know exactly what they have with him. He had kind of a very mixed bag rookie year. Some people saying he was a colossal disappointment, other people seeing the progress there. You know, what does Mike Mularkey take from that year? Can he just scrap it and start over again? I know you had a chance to visit with Maurice Jones-Drew down in Indy. What is the general consensus around Gabbert and what they can do with him going forward?
I think the consensus is that, you know, certainly they would have liked to have seen more than they saw last season, but at the same time, he had so much changing around him, whether it was, changes on the coaching staff, changes at the wide receiver position, a lack of protection. So I think the thought is that they really need to make the most of this offseason. Obviously, the first full offseason he will have, he's going to get a chance to learn a new system. Gene Smith is going to get him some better targets. There's no question that upgrading the wide receiver position will be the number one priority for that team. And then they got to see what happens in year two. It's going to be a really big year for him, and as I mentioned, I think with better coaching and better weapons, they're at least very hopeful that some of that continuity is going to lead to him making major strides this offseason.
You know, Arthur, such a great point. No offseason last year, a full offseason this year. We'll talk more about that in the publisher's pen. Arthur, thank you much. Next up, we take a look at the AFC East season in review. Welcome back, everybody. Pro Football Weekly rolls on as the week after the Super Bowl. We begin our season in review series looking at the AFC this week. I'm Hub Arkish along with Eric Edholm, and we now welcome in Associate Editor Kevin Fishbane, who covers the AFC East for us. Kev, we've had a lot of Patriot talk the last couple weeks. We'll save them for last. We got to start with the New York Jets, and I, for one, am sitting here scratching my head. I wouldn't have given Santonio Holmes 15 cents to come back, let alone $15 million. I understand that he is their only big play threat on offense, but he's also the biggest problem in their locker room. You tell me what I'm missing.
Yeah, it's quite the statement for a guy who was the biggest problem in their locker room. Got benched in the season finale when they were still technically fighting for a playoff spot, and he had the least productive season of his entire career. But as you said, Hub, he is clear-cut the best receiver they have. It's expected they're not going to resign Plaxico Burress, and he'd still be better than Plax. And Woody Johnson, the owner, went out and said that Santonio Holmes is one of the best Jets they've had of all time, which kind of shows where he rests in terms of his football knowledge. And Rex Ryan has been very upfront about how he feels about Santonio Holmes' abilities on the field. So they keep putting confidence in him, keep putting money in his pocket, and we'll have to just wait and see and how he performs next season.
Yeah, but I mean, his abilities on the field are well documented. He only shows them 30 or 40% of the time, and he is such a problem off the field. I'm not debating you. I get crazy when I hear this stuff.
Yeah, I know, and it doesn't help that he doesn't have a quarterback that the quarterback's far from one of the elite guys in the league, so it's hard for him to get extra production from that aspect. And you know, next year, unless they get another receiver, all teams are going to focus on Holmes, and you put two guys on him, he'll just won't run the play.
And for our listeners, if you get a chance to go to ProFootballWeekly.com, we've got a video series, The Most Overrated Players in the NFL. Let me just tease it up for you a little bit. Santonio Holmes is on that list, and I fully pushed him forward. He's had one good year in his career.
But I didn't vote, so that's not on me.
the other side of the coin, like you mentioned, mention Mark Sanchez. I mean, we look at Tom Brady and Wes Welker and his tight ends. We look at Eli Manning and his receivers. They make each other better. There's no question about it. What gives the Jets the idea that Mark Sanchez and San Antonio Holmes, who had their differences, who couldn't hook up at times, can make each other better next season?
To be honest, I have no idea. I mean, it hasn't worked, you know, between the two of them. And Mark Sanchez is a big reason the Jets can't get over the hump, whether it was getting past the AFC Championship game the previous 2 years or getting into the playoffs this year. I mean, he was a part of the complete breakdown of the team this year. Now, I think he got a little bit short-sighted because the defense was bad this year compared to what it had been in previous years. The running game didn't help him out. His offensive line, especially on the right side, broke down as well. The Jets really got to bring somebody in to put some fire to him. You know, they need to give Mark Sanchez some kind of challenge. You know, everybody talk about how he's coddled. Really, the way he's coddled is the fact that they really don't put any pressure on him by bringing anybody else in other than 42-year-old Mark Brunell.
Well, and I do want to get to the rest of your teams, Kevin, but one more point here. The Jets have got so much else to fix this offseason. They've got to find more pass rush. The offensive line wasn't itself last year. And at running back, I can't imagine LT's coming back after his honesty about where this team was at and the way he's playing these days. And Sean Green hasn't been the answer as a franchise back.
Yeah, and they don't have a whole lot of cap room either, Hub, and they have a lot of free agency on the defensive side. Brian Thomas, Jim Leonard, Sione Pua, who they're going to want to keep. I mean, there's a lot of this team could have a lot of turnover for next year, and Rex Ryan and Woody Johnson do not want to rebuild, but, you know, they're going to have to do a lot to try to get this team back to the playoffs.
Kevin, it's easy to forget about the Buffalo Bills in this discussion here of the AFC East, and we know about the rest of the teams kind of make some headlines, including the Dolphins, who are sure to be busy this offseason. But what lies ahead for the Bills? I mean, just sort of taking stock of what they've done this season and the disappointing finish they had.
Yeah, well, the first thing is defense, Eric, and that was what they focused on in the draft last year, and it worked out. They got three guys right away that contributed right away, starting with Marcell Dareus, who had a great rookie season. You know, they're very strong in the middle of that defense. Kelvin Shepard, another rookie, had a great year, but when they get to the draft, they have to find a pass rusher. They put no pressure on the quarterback the entire season. Sean Merriman was a complete bust, although Buddy Nick says they're going to go ahead and give him another medical check and continue to try to kick the tires there, but, you know, this team has no edge rushers. Chris Kelce, maybe, but he, you know, he's a veteran. They still need somebody there. The cornerbacks completely let the team down this year, on defense as well. The Bills have one of the better safety groups in the entire league, as all these teams are trying to find good safeties. The Bills are actually all right there, but it really, with them, it starts with getting some pressure on the quarterback and getting some edge rushers.
Kev, I am a Joe Philbin fan. Know a lot about him, have watched him. I think he's probably going to prove to be a very good hire for the Miami Dolphins, but it's not the hire that they set out to make. Now, there's already rumblings about some griping on the defense and the possibility of switching from a 3-4 to a 4-3. It's a team that's got a lot of pieces in place but needs more. What do you see happening here in the offseason?
Well, it's all going to start with the quarterback. I mean, the Peyton Manning decision is going to be the domino that affects a lot of teams in this league, and it's going to, you know, start with Miami, because we know Stephen Ross is, and I quote, infatuated, was the report from last week with Peyton Manning, and that's no surprise considering Stephen Ross, you know, wants to win and also wants to put a lot of people in the seats in Miami, and he's gonna give Peyton Manning pretty much any type of money that he wants to come to Miami, assuming that Manning can play. After that, it's Matt Flynn, and if Matt Flynn is not the answer, and we know Joe Philbin likes Matt Flynn, but how much? And, you know, will they be able to get him to come to Miami, and is he the answer, or are they gonna make a move and try to get Robert Griffin III? You know, the quarterbacks, it's kind of weird because Matt Moore actually had a pretty decent season for Miami, but not enough to get them over the hump. And, you know, if you're able to bring in an elite quarterback like that, you have Brandon Marshall, who had another very good kind of under the radar season. Reggie Bush coming off a career year. You have one of the best blindside tackles in the league. I know Jake London have a great year, but he's still one of the best. And you have plenty of talent on the defensive side of the ball. They need another pass rusher and some help in the secondary. But if they can bring in an elite quarterback like Peyton Manning, or if Matt Flynn is as good as people think he is, then this team, you're talking about a playoff contender.
Kevin, the Patriots, we know they lost the Super Bowl, a team that some people said maybe not should have been there in the first place, but a lot of free agents, a lot of draft picks, again, sort of the same type of thing we've seen every year. In the last 20 or 30 seconds, do they have a chance to be one of the four or five, you know, favorites heading into next season?
I think they do, because as long as Tom Brady's there and as long as most of his offensive line's intact, that offense is still going to be very hard to stop. You know, number one this offseason is getting Wes Welker and re-signing him, whether it's a franchise tag or long-term deal. He'll be back in New England. It's just a question question of how, and they're going to have to figure out that back end of that defense. And, you know, they'd like to get another pass rusher as well. They have these extra draft picks. I expect them to, you know, get a defensive lineman, maybe a linebacker, cornerback, safety. They got to get better personnel on that defensive side of the football. But as long as Brady's there, as long as Gronkowski, Welker, and Hernandez there, and especially because the Jets are on a bit of a downswing, they're still the team to beat in the AFC East.
You know, guys, the funny thing about it is that that Patriot back end of the defense was actually pretty good in the playoffs,
yes,
in the Super Bowl.
Right.
But more work to do. Got to upgrade the talent. Kevin, thank you very much. We take another very quick commercial break, and then we're back to break down the season in review with the AFC West and Eli Cabron. That's coming up next. Yes, it is, and we are doing the season in review in the American Football Conference here at PFW. We will do the NFC next week. I'm Hub Arkish with Eric Enholm, and we now welcome in Associate Editor Eli Cabron. And Eli, the AFC West is your beat. I'm going to start in Denver, and we're not going to spend more than 10, 15 seconds on Tim Tebow for the first time in over 12 months.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's going to come back. He's going to be number one on the depth chart. They're going to bring in another veteran quarterback. They may draft one. This is all the way you build football teams. So let's move on to stuff that's a little more curious. Forget that Knowshon Moreno went out and got himself a DUI. Why the hell is his license plate sauced? I mean, was he trying to get cops to stop him, or is this a guy with no working brain cells?
Well, the way to get cops to stop you is to go 95 in a construction zone, which is actually what he did. But having the license plate just adds to the humor. But I don't think the Broncos organization finds it as funny as the rest of us do, because he's already on thin ice to begin with. He hasn't been very productive his three seasons in the NFL. He's coming off knee surgery. Running back's a huge need for the Broncos with Willis McGahee at 30 years old, but it doesn't look like Moreno's going to be the guy to take that job.
A quick follow-up on the defense. Dennis Allen takes the Raiders' job. We'll talk about them in a second. But what's the direction of the defense? We obviously saw some big progress, but I think still a lot more needed in terms of personnel there.
Yeah, they definitely need help in the secondary. They kind of got exposed in that New England game in the playoffs, that Tom Brady and those tight ends just had their way with the safeties. They drafted two safeties last year, but they still need more reinforcements. And then both their corners, Andre Goodman and Champ Bailey, are like 34 years old, so they're going to need more help there. Jack Del Rio is the new coordinator. Obviously, he has a lot of experience, but they need more talent across the board on defense.
Yeah, you know, I smile about that defense because I love Von Miller. I love Elmas Dumervil. I love DJ Williams. Champ Bailey is going to be 61 years old when the season starts. And this is a team that gave up almost 90 points in two games to the Patriots in the last 5-6 weeks. Now, I know Patriots are good, but I don't get all the love for that Denver defense. Now, I do understand why people like the Kansas City defense. Offense is probably where the focus is going to be. Is Matt Cassel going to be healthy? And, you know, Eli, interesting, a new offensive coordinator who is coming off being a huge disappointment in both Cleveland and Miami. Very interesting hire.
Yeah, Brian Doball is the new coordinator there, and he has past ties with Matt Cassel, as it seems everybody in Kansas City does. He was he was a receivers coach in New England when Matt Cassel was a first and second year player, so obviously Cassel wasn't seeing many snaps there, but they have a past relationship, and he's likely going to be the head guy in the depth chart heading into camp, but it's still unknown if they'll bring Kyle Orton back. He had some success at the end of the year, so still some questions for that Chiefs offense.
Yeah, I knew we'd get to the Raiders eventually. Obviously, they're such an intriguing team. I mean, following the death of Al Davis, you know, the firing of their head coach, you know, we have a new one in Dennis Allen, as I mentioned before, Reggie McKenzie, the GM. Can we get an idea of what the direction of this team is right now? Because you've got Carson Palmer. He's probably the immediate starter. We don't know if Terrell Pryor could wrest that job from at some point. What would you say is their primary focus this offseason off kind of a strange year out in Oakland?
Yeah, Eric, the offseason for the Raiders is going to be interesting because they don't have much cap room. They invested so much in guys like Richard Seymour and Stanford Rout last year, and then they almost have no draft picks. They have no picks in the first four rounds until they get some supplemental picks. So Reggie McKenzie's hands are kind of tied at this point. They're going to have to release some players just in order to make some moves. But I think that they need more talent, obviously, across the board on offense. Receiver, they got some young guys in Darius Heyward-Bey. He improved, and Denarius Moore, but they need more depth there. And then on defense, they just need playmakers all across the board. So until McKenzie can figure out a way to get some wiggle room in the cap, they're going to be kind of stuck.
You know, Eli, a lot of folks were flat-out stunned that both A.J. Smith and Norv Turner will be back in San Diego. Personally, I think it shows why the Spanoses are amongst the smarter owners in the NFL. Unless you're sure there's somebody better, why make a change? And there isn't anybody better out there. So with the same GM, with the same coach, a team that may be ready to win right away again, the surprises are that apparently Vincent Jackson will not be franchised a second year in a row, which means he's almost certainly to move on when somebody overpays him. And their former All-Pro left tackle Marcus McNeil could very well be cut. Other changes need to be made as well. Where do you think the focus will be in San Diego?
Well, the focus, I think, Hub, will be on the offensive line. I talked to Philip Rivers last week in Indianapolis, and he said that he's hopeful that Chris Dielman, the All-Pro guard, will return, but he didn't know about McNeil. McNeil had some neck issues, and he couldn't really move his head at all, and that's obviously an issue when you're blocking. So they're likely to cut him and try to restock that line. Protection for Rivers last year was a huge issue, as were turnovers. So some cohesiveness on offense is going to be a huge step in the right direction for the Chargers. And then on defense, they have to decide about Takeo Spikes. He's getting up there in age at middle linebacker. They might try to get younger on the defense as well.
Yeah, wow. I mean, can't really move your head is an issue when you're just living. It tells you what it's like to play in this league, guys. Eli, thank you very, very much. We are going to move forward now. We have the AFC North provided a couple playoff teams this year and a couple teams on the way up. We'll take a look at where they're headed next. We're talking season in review, NFL season in review, here on Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor, and my co-host during the off-season is our senior editor, Eric Edholm. We now welcome in another one of our occasional co-hosts and senior editors, Mike Wilkening, and Wilkie covers the AFC North for us. And, Mike, we're going to go bottom up here. I want to start with the Cleveland Browns. Pat Shurmur, the rookie head coach, got a strong vote of confidence from the president of football operations, Mike Holmgren. You wouldn't think he'd need it after 1 year, but he got it anyway. And you wonder about this football team. Actually, really good on defense, surprisingly good on defense. Defensive coordinator Dick Geron did a nice job there. They've got some good young players, some of them not well known around the league, but a long way to go on offense. Where do you think the focus is this offseason for the Browns?
Oh, it's definitely on offense, Hub. This is a team that scored 46 offensive touchdowns combined the last 2 years. That's as many as the Carolina Panthers scored this season on offense. So it kind of gives you an idea of where the Browns need to put their emphasis. And already they've started that process. They hired Brad Childress as the offensive coordinator. You know, having another experienced person in the West Coast scheme certainly can't hurt things. But when you look at this team from a skill position standpoint, you can make the argument that they need help at quarterback, at running back, and at wide receiver. So that's a lot of work to accomplish in one offseason.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the Carolina Panthers because the Cleveland Browns, like you said, were anemic on that side of the ball. Panthers were even worse in 2010. And they go out and draft Cam Newton, and the guy kind of sparked things a little bit, you could say, that they were an explosive offense. They were a vertical threat offense. Is there any chance, and I know people in Cleveland want to know what the opportunity might be to get Robert Griffin, but is there any chance they could move away from Colt McCoy and go with somebody like Griffin who, let's face it, would put some butts in seats and would really get some excitement going?
I certainly think there is a chance. When the offense struggles the way it has over the years and in the first 2 years of the Mike Holmgren regime in Cleveland, I think that when you look at it, this is a team that needs to improve in every area. And I think every area of the operation has to be under focus. And, you know, Colt McCoy, I think, showed some promise at times this year, but at other times the offense sputtered. And again, I think he needs more talent around him. Whoever the quarterback is going to need some more help. But I think if Robert Griffin III is there at number four, the Browns could be hard-pressed to pass him for the reasons you talked about. Obviously a dynamic talent. He would put fans in the seats. And when it comes down to it, guys, as we know, the way the rules have changed in the first round now, it's a little less cost-prohibitive to draft a guy that highly. But if you make a mistake with a quarterback high in the draft, it's not the end of the world. I think this is a team that needs to be dynamic. They need to add as many playmakers as possible. Certainly Griffin fits that mold.
You know, guys, it's funny. The Panther example, and I understand it and I agree with it, and Cam Newton was great. I'm not taking anything away from him. But that's a team that was bringing back a couple of all-pro offensive linemen, an all-pro wide receiver, a Pro Bowl running back, two Pro Bowl caliber running backs, and then Newton stepped in. Cleveland has none of that to lean on except for Joe Thomas at left tackle. Let's talk about the Cincinnati Bengals, Mike, a surprise playoff team in 2011, albeit a 9-7 team, got a surprisingly strong performance from Andy Dalton at quarterback, but not an earth-shattering or head-shaking performance. So where do the Bengals go next?
one of the key things they're going to have to do, I think, is address wide receiver position opposite of AJ Green, who was wonderful as a rookie, and his connection with Dalton is really something that this offense can be proud of and something they can build upon in 2012. But getting more consistency at the position opposite of Green, I think, is a must. And Jerome Simpson, who has shown a lot of promise over the years, but hasn't maybe been the most consistent guy, is obviously running some off-field issues. He's a free agent. So is Andre Caldwell. It's a team where you've got some core pieces there, but you look at that wide receiver spot, you look at the running back spot where Cedric Benson's contract is up. They've got to get a little bit more punch on offense. They're good. If they want to get to very good, they're going to have to add a little bit more playmaking ability.
And on the other side of the ball, I got a chance down at the Super Bowl to talk to the linebacker Thomas Howard. One of the first things out of his mouth was Mike Zimmer saying that he really put them in great spots to succeed as a defense, and the fact that he's back this year, could that be one of those sort of hidden values that people don't sort of take much into account when they look at the Bengals' chances next year, where, hey, another year in this defense and his schemes could be very beneficial?
Right. This is a defense that's always been good since Zimmer's come on board, and to retain him, I think, is a very valuable thing. It's still a group that's, in the front seven's got a lot of talent. You'd like to see them maybe add a little bit in the secondary, but they're not that far away from being very, very good on that side of the ball, and Zimmer's return certainly helps that process as they try to take that next step.
Mike, we've got to take a very quick commercial break, but we're going to be back to talk about the other two clubs at the top of the AFC South. We've got a year in review for the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens coming up next. Alrighty, we move on with the AFC season in review, 2011 NFL season in review. Hub Arkish and Eric Edholm visiting with Mike Wilkening, who covers the AFC North for us. And let's talk about the, they tied for the division champ, but they lost the tiebreaker. That'd be the Pittsburgh Steelers. And kind of a stunning offseason move to me so far. Bruce Arians, I'm not stunned that he was let go. You can take the retirement crap and stick it, because he took another job a couple of weeks later. He was let go, and I know that there'd been some questionable relationships there in Pittsburgh. But to let Bruce Arians go and then bring in Todd Haley, who brings with him legendary communication problems with the offense that he did so well with in Arizona, with the team in Kansas City that he did a nice job with but was fired after 2 years, and now you've got the troika of Big Ben, Todd Haley, and Mike Tomlin. That sounds like a marriage made in hell to me, Mike, but what do I know?
Well, it certainly adds to the intrigue in Pittsburgh, and I think that what everybody is looking for is how Ben Roethlisberger plays in this particular scheme, and I think this is an offense that, when you look at what they did last year, 34 touchdowns, 325 points overall total for this Pittsburgh team, that was below the league average. We know they've got better talent than that. We know Roethlisberger is an elite blue chip quarterback, wonderful receivers at his disposal, but for some reason, the offense didn't always click. Now there's the injury at the end of the year for Roethlisberger, so you throw out maybe some of that statistics, but I think when it comes down to it, we're looking for greater consistency out of this offense, looking for, more points, certainly, and now we're looking to see how this relationship between Roethlisberger, who was close to Arians, how that works out with Todd Haley.
And we're also looking to see what this roster is going to look like, because, Mike, as much stability as there has been in Pittsburgh over the years, I think that's been one of their hallmarks. It sounds like everything's pointing towards some changing of the guards. Guys like Hines Ward, maybe James Ferrer, we don't know about Aaron Smith's health, Brett Kiesel, guys like that. Casey Hampton's coming off an injury. There should be some changes with this roster, right?
Well, they're going to have to get into cap compliance. They've already started that process. They released Bryant McFadden, All-Star, and has battled to save a little bit of money. Reportedly, I think there was a restructure of Lamar Woodley's contract as well. So they've started that process as is, but you look at a guy like Hampton, big cap number coming off a knee injury. Certainly, you have to wonder what goes on there. Ferrier, another guy getting up in age. Ward, I believe $4 million is scheduled to make next year. He's a guy that probably, if he's back, is their fourth or fifth receiver or thereabouts. So, yeah, there is a little bit of changing the guard that probably goes on in Pittsburgh. They've drafted pretty well over the years, so obviously they've got some young talent to sort of supplement that older core. But I think age and how they react to age of that core is something that you got to keep an eye on.
Guys, let me tell you, I can't say that I know Haley well now, but I did know Todd very well a little over a decade ago when he was the wide receivers coach in Chicago, and I was one of the voices of the Bears on the radio. he's a different kind of dude. He's a really good guy. I really like Todd, but his communication is interesting and he is volatile. He's mercurial and you just never know what's going to happen next, but he does know offense. He is a good guy. It should be very interesting to watch how he fits in Pittsburgh. Let's talk about the Baltimore Ravens. Mike, my favorite quote so far of the offseason. It's not the biggest story in Baltimore, but Ricky Williams announces his retirement. And then, according to the Baltimore Sun, in an interview on WQAM radio, asked if the retirement is in fact permanent, he says, "The easy answer is I've moved on, but the thing I've learned about myself is who the hell knows," close quote. So, you know, it doesn't really matter as far as the future of the Ravens. I just love Ricky Williams. What do they have to worry about this offseason?
Well, I think what they've got to worry about is trying to get a little bit more dynamic on offense, you know, adding to that maybe the receiving core. I think the offensive line is a concern. Certainly, I think they've got to defend the edges a little bit better. You know, Matt Burke considering retirement. Andre Girard, the backup center, also is a free agent. So you've got to address those positions. You mentioned Ricky Williams, pretty good backup running back to have. He's not in the picture. That would mean Anthony Allen, the second-year product out of Georgia Tech, would be next in line. You'd maybe want to get a little bit more experienced, have another option behind Ray Rice there. Nobody expects Ray Rice to go. He's either going to get the franchise tag or get a contract extension. But, you know, those are some of the things they have to worry about. And there's also the issue of getting Joe Flacco signed to a contract extension, which they've pretty much signaled they're going to do. So you start having to really spend money this season and into future seasons, and it looks like the Ravens are going to have to make some really key calls here in this offseason.
All right, Mike, very quickly, big call on defense. Chuck Pagano moves on. They've done a great job of promoting from within. Will it have an impact on the defense?
I don't think so. I think we've seen this before with this team. They've made changes at coordinator time and time again because guys go and get better jobs or go and move elsewhere. And the defense has always remained the same because the personnel has largely stayed the same. And the personnel is going to drive the bus here in Baltimore.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. That is the AFC 2011 NFL season in review. Got the NFC next week. And next up, the Publisher's Pen.
And now with the Publisher's Pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Well, Eric, certainly the most fascinating and intriguing thing about this offseason for the NFL is going to be that there will be one, as opposed to last year when, you know, they stopped playing and then they stopped talking and we had a lockout that took us up to August and we marveled at the results once they got started again, the accomplishments of Jim Harbaugh in San Francisco and to somewhat lesser degree the other rookie head coaches, the job that Ron Rivera did in Carolina and the rookie quarterbacks. Everybody was talking about it. Look what Cam Newton and Andy Dalton and even a T.J. Yates did with no offseason to prepare. Now, this year we're going to have a full stretch for free agency, which means there's going to be more studied and more significant moves made. The draft won't be all that different, but then we get into the offseason program. It's going to be different workout regimen, but all these young quarterbacks, all these young coaches, a full offseason to prepare and get ready. You have to wonder, is this going to be a good thing for the Harbaughs and Riveras and Newtons and Daltons of the world, or how much will it change what they do?
Well, I think it's certainly going to be a good thing for Blaine Gabbert, who we talked about earlier in one of the segments, Christian Ponder up in Minnesota. Both guys seem to regress at some point, and so I think getting those 1,000 to 1,500 snaps and OTAs and minicamps is really going to benefit both guys.
It will be different for the NFL, different for the young players and coaches, and probably more entertaining for us as fans and media. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Again, next week we'll be back with the year in review for the NFC. Our thanks to Randy Meyer, our outstanding producer and engineer, and Syndication Network, our home studio and syndicator. And most of all, our thanks to all of you for being there. We do appreciate it. Stay tuned next week, same time, same station, for more Pro Football Weekly.